radio@firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Okay, welcome to radio@firehouse.com. This is Peter Matthews, and we're here in Chicago, and I'm here with firefighter Joe Martinelli from Chicago Squad 2, who is the top winner in this year's Heroism and Community Service Awards with Firehouse. And Joe, thank you for joining us, and congratulations.
Thank you, Pete. It's an honor, but, you know, it is a humbling experience to have this happen.
Okay. Well, congratulations, and we're just going to go into a little bit about what happened on March 1st of 2009. Squad 2 was dispatched on a still alarm to 3312 North Lawndale for a building fire. So why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, what you guys encountered upon arrival?
That's actually right around the corner from our firehouse. We're quartered. Squad 2 is quartered with Engine 91. So on a still alarm that close, we park down the street. So we leave room for the first two companies, the first two truck and second engine. But we act as first truck with our engine. And that night I was assigned to be my officer's partner. So I was on the hand pump, and I had hand pumps at irons and a pike pole. And when we showed up, residents were outside, and we definitely knew the first engine was on the scene already, reported a fire. They had smoke showing, and there were residents outside the building that said that they think that there was somebody trapped in, and a man lived on the first floor. So that was, we took a good size up, got, you know, the front sector 1, 2, and 3 of the building, and you could see the fire was pretty much had taken the rear of the building on the first floor.
Okay.
And the probably kitchen, back bedroom, and at that time, back porches, maybe.
Okay.
We didn't know.
And can you tell us about the type of building that you guys encountered and what the makeup was?
Sure. It's a very common building in Chicago. We call it a Chicago two flat, and
okay.
It's a two-story ordinary brick building with the two residences in it, and generally the first floor is, you know, 4 to 8 feet off the ground, and the second floor on top of that, and it's a flat roof building with separated, non-attached, separated by gangways on each side.
Okay. All right, cool. So you pull up. Bystanders are saying there's somebody trapped inside. You obviously have a confirmed fire, and tell us about your actions as a member of the squad, as the engine company is probably getting their line, get some water supply.
Well, the engine was dropping a line right away, and they were, I believe, because I get occupied with, or got occupied with our duties,
okay.
And being on the hand pump that day, and having a set of irons, being my boss's partner, we went up and forced the door, and we treated it like any other door. When I had the bar set in the door, I got a crack open. It was some heavy push. Black smoke came out right away, so we knew we had a good fire going, you know, in the building. Once everybody was ready, we popped the door, and I think the engine company was dropping and driving to the hydrant. I'm not exactly sure, but we went in. My partner, who was my captain that night, Pat Maloney, was we started our primary search toward the fire. And I brought my bar and my can with me.
Okay.
And so I stayed on the left-hand wall, which the entranceway is on the left-hand side of the building, which on a two-flat typically means the bedrooms are going to be on that side too. So I knew I passed one bedroom, but I was going toward the fire because having a can, I want to contain the fire. And my boss fanned out for me and started doing a search off to my right as I went to the rear of the building.
Okay. And what conditions did you encounter once you kind of made your way into the structure? Obviously, you were met with smoke.
Yeah, so. It was black smoke to the floor.
Okay.
Typical problem that firemen across the country always see nowadays with these vinyl replacement windows and everything else is they really bottle things up and hold the heat pretty good.
Okay.
And they don't fail at the lower temperatures that the standard double-hung window used to fail at.
Okay.
So we, you know, It was hot, but it wasn't unbearable. I mean, didn't seem like flashover was imminent or anything. So we pushed in with the can, and I was met about halfway back at the apartment into the hallway that brings you to the bathroom, rear bedroom, and kitchen of this type of apartment.
Okay.
And the fire was lapping across the ceiling there. So that's where I was going to make my stand with the hand pump, until the engine stretched their line.
Okay. And did you have any signs of life at that point as you were making your way through?
You know what? We didn't hear anything, and I heard my boss crawl up to my side, and he said he was going to go see about that line. And okay. I said, I got the fire. If it gets too bad, he told me to back out, and that was my plan.
Okay.
So.
All right. So then you come across the bedroom?
Well, after in Chicago, we've got the hand pumps, and once it's about, 4 gallons of water, 5 gallons of water, it once I was out of water and the fire started lapping over the head, I decided to make haste and be on my way out. But I knew I had passed the bedroom on the way, and so I ducked into the bedroom to do a real quick primary search, and in there I found the victim laying on the bed. Okay. I bounced the bed real fast, and he was there. And at that, I just make a grab. I was in shock that there was a victim, that I found a victim. So
okay.
That was that.
So so you find a victim.
Well,
fire is coming up right behind you, I would assume, at this point.
Radioed on the squads. It's a 6-man rescue company.
Okay.
And we all carry radios. We're all equipped with radios, which is a great advantage from being able to talk to, most importantly, being able to listen.
Mm-hmm.
But I radioed the 7th Battalion, who is the battalion chief for our area, and that emergency message that I had found a victim and that I was coming out with them.
Okay.
And I got the victim off the bed, and things were getting hotter and hotter. But by the time I got the victim down, sat him up, and I got my webbing around him.
Okay.
As you can see, I'm not, the audience can't see, but I'm not the biggest of guys. I'm a little 5'5" runt. But so I got the choker webbing around his chest.
Okay.
And I started to drag him out back through the door I came, figuring the entrance door was, 15 feet from me out the door, And as I got closer to the bedroom door, and I got the victim about halfway into the doorway, I decided it was a little too hot, and I looked up, and the room had, it started to flash over. It was rolling probably 4 feet above my head, as I'm on the ground.
Oh, wow.
So,
okay.
I, at that time, decided it wasn't a good idea to try and go that way with them. It was going to take me a little too long to get him out, and I figured he would have had a better chance if I went for the window.
Okay.
Seeing as I was on the first floor and a short ground ladder, or even some bigger guys could help me get him out the window, from the outside. I got the victim back inside the door, shut the door, and we're big on training, and RIT has been a big part of the Chicago Fire Department since I got on the job, is when RIT, or the Rapid Intervention Teams, and the idea of saving our own came to the Chicago Fire Department in a actual program. And we're taught, if you're lost, trapped, or, hurt, you call a Mayday.
Okay.
And that's when I gave a Mayday transmission that it was... To clarify, I said it was Squad 2, Joey to Battalion 7, so he knew it was me that had the victim.
Okay.
Now I'm trapped with the victim. Back in the bedroom, I got the door shut. I'm going for the windows.
Okay.
And I knew from my size up on the outside, from our size up, that this bedroom, this front bedroom, had a window. And it had an air conditioner, but generally, it's no problem. You pull the air conditioner in and use it as a step to come right out the window.
Okay.
But... this didn't happen. This window had to be, the air conditioner had to be leg bolted in, as I found out later after the fire. So
Murphy's Law kicked in at that
Murphy's
point.
Murphy's Law kicked in, and I took a pretty good trimming, cleaning out the window. It was a double hung window and a single window unit, and got the window cleaned out. It was totally clear glass, but I couldn't get this air conditioner. And like I said, I stand about 5 feet, 5 inches tall, and the top of the window air conditioner was probably 4.5 feet.
Okay.
So I wasn't, and with the victim was a larger man. hemming and hawing. I tried to get him up over the window air conditioner and then figured, and I was on top of the air conditioner. I looked out the RIT company on a still alarm. You get in Chicago, you get two engines, two trucks on the working fire, or in our response area, you get the squad. And then on the working fire, you get a RIT chief and a RIT truck.
Okay.
So the RIT truck I just saw walking up, and they knew something was going on, so they came down the gangway,
okay,
you know, to give me a hand, but I couldn't get them over. So basically,
what's the conditions in the room at that time? I mean, obviously, how long do you think it was?
You know what?
From the time you closed the window, it's tough to.
Yeah, it goes in slow motion, and it, you know, what 1 second is could feel like a lifetime. But okay. You know, it was a solid minute by the time I had dragged the victim back in, got him turned around into a position where I could try and get him out over the air conditioner.
Okay.
And it just wasn't working. I was gassed. You know, I was wiped.
All right.
But it was probably a couple of seconds of trying to get him up and over. And at this time, it was hot. I mean, I burnt my ears through my hood, and I put my ear flaps on my helmet. I put those down. And actually, to get my hood on, I got to put the ear flaps down. That's the way I train myself to always try and to protect myself. But it was hot. That's where I got burnt around in my face and ears was trying to get that window out. And every time I stood up, so it was banking down and it was rolling in the ceiling above us.
Okay.
But at the time, and what saved me was everybody on the scene was working together. Mm-hmm. You know, it was they were getting the line stretched. I later found out that they had water trouble and a dead hydrant and in the front, but the second engine led out to the rear, and with the help of the second truck who reports to the rear, and my partners on squad two who report to the rear, they led out to the rear, and instead of going to the floor above, and they took the fire. And once I heard water playing, which is a wonderful sound, you know, it's just like the roof when you're pushing in with the engine and you hear that roof getting made, you know, those saws running, it's a beautiful thing, or that skylight cracking, it's a beautiful thing. But I heard water bouncing around further back into the apartment, and so I decided to open the door and give it a shot, because I was hoping they had, you know, water on the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got the poor guy turned back around, and I started dragging him back out, and the fire was being knocked from the rear, which was pushing a little bit of steam our way, but we still had some lapping fire, and we crawled out to the doorway where my boss, Cap Maloney, assisted me, because I was, like I said, 15 feet felt like 10 miles.
Yeah.
You know.
So at this point, you're making your way out, and your captain is meeting you right at the doorway.
And my captain finally came back in.
Okay.
Yeah, he was about to punch me because he was hot. I scared my second dad to death that night. But he assisted me, and he took over the front, the head position, and I gave him my webbing, and I took the feet, and we were able to get him out the last 5 feet out to the door.
Okay.
And that was that.
Okay.
You know?
All right. You know, I know it's tough, you know, having been involved with this program for several years. You know, 80-plus submissions were received for the 2009 Firehouse Heroism Community Service Awards. You're number one of 80-something. So, you know, how does that feel to be chosen by your peers? It's not a city or you know, some sort of civic group, but it's your peers across the country that choose you to take this award.
Yeah, it's just a humbling experience. It's not. I don't, and no one I know is a fireman for awards. You know, you do it because it's a great job. I think to be in a position to be able to help people, and it's just a humbling experience. I was given an award for the city of Chicago, the Lambert Tree, and that was. You know, there's one a year given, and in my career there might be 30, you know, if I stay 30 years, hopefully I make it, but there are 30 awards given, and to be nominated for for Firehouse Magazine's award is humbling, especially when you think of the scope of 86 where submissions were sent in, but how many thousands of acts of bravery, of much more going above and beyond the call. I mean, I don't think of what I did as beyond above and beyond the call. I was just doing my job, but the guys that acts that never go noticed, or you know, except by their own guys, you know, and that's been just a humbling experience. Okay. I'm lost for words.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you, Ken.
It was good to read the report and see what happened. And we will also have a copy of the diagram just to kind of help illustrate the path that Joe and his crew took that day and show you the fire conditions. So you can download that diagram here on the podcast player page at radio@firehouse.com.